Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hey, and good afternoon, everybody. Julie Hayden and Chuck Bonnywell here, the Chuck and Julie Show. I'll be doing this show solo today. Chuck is finishing putting the final touches on the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle. Its paper goes out to about 100,000 people. I'm in the central Denver area. We publish it once a month, and it goes to the printer tomorrow. So it's a big day for Chuck. I'm putting a lot of work into that. So he will not be here. It's just going to be me. I think Mark Griffith is going to be joining us. Mark has filled in for us as a talk show host at KLZ and has been reading Scott Atlas's book. What is it called? Talking about a plague upon our house. He was on one of the task forces under Trump when COVID first hit. And it's sort of a tell-all, but Mark has been texting me saying, oh my God, this is amazing. You got to read it. And I said, hey, why don't you come on the show and we can talk about it. So hopefully he'll be joining us here in a few seconds. The show brought to you by AmericaCitizenPress.com, a great conservative website. Also, Dr. Julie McCallan and Denver Synergetics. What do we have? Okay, he's trying to join, so we'll get him there. You know, Amazon, the evil Amazon Web Services, which is essentially the cloud portion of Amazon, is having some issues, basically, today and other days. Now, they keep telling us they're not being hacked. You're not being hacked. And you're like, well, okay, I don't know. And maybe just let you say this, Mark, if we don't get him here pretty quick, let's just go ahead and tell him we'll take him on the telephone. Oh, maybe we have him here there too. The other thing I wanted to talk about, this whole January 6th thing in Liz Cheney, Tucker Carlson actually pointed out something. We'll talk about that a little bit later too. Pointed out that besides just the ridiculousness of subpoenaing Trump, everybody had to do with Trump for causing an insurrection that the FBI already said there's no evidence that there was any kind of organization or planning. So, you know, why Congress is investigating it, I don't know. But what's interesting is that Liz Cheney, through Congress, was able to get her hands, she and Adam Schiff, on the text messages of Fox News anchors, but as private citizens. And he says this is extremely alarming. That the Congress is using the, you know, complete infinite power of the National Security Act and Homeland Security actions to go ahead and seize the texts and communications, the private communications of private citizens. And it's like, hey, you know, nothing you can do about it. That's totally, you know, too bad. So, you know, not only that, but Adam Schiff is lying about it. So we can talk about that. A couple of lesser notes, but I wanted to talk about this too. I don't know if you guys saw Centennial Elementary, a Denver public school, elementary school, was supposed to be having parents of colored families or parents of families of color, okay, a playground night. So only for families of color. Now, they didn't say what color you had to be. They didn't say how much color you had to be, but this was a billboard outside of a Denver public school. Besides all the critical race theory, this is just another sign of Denver destroying itself, because if you destroy the school system, you destroy a city eventually. And then finally, I've always thought that the pretty women they have standing on the NFL sidelines during football games who read like quick little blurbs about the coach said this, blah, 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 right? Was sort of like having NFL or NBC or Fox or whatever cheerleaders, so to speak, right? I always thought that was sort of a demeaning, stupid role. Sorry if one of you was out there. But Michelle Tafoya, who has been one forever and who actually was pretty good, she was one of those who sort of sounded like she knew what she was talking about, went on The View and had the oh my gosh, the gall to disagree with one of the radical progressive View hosts that the NFL was not the equivalent of white owners and slavery. She pointed out that the NFL people actually make a lot of money, that it's a choice, et cetera, et cetera. So NBC, she's been disappeared. She's been disappeared. So we can talk about all of that. And Thomas, I don't know, maybe let's see if we can just maybe try calling Mark and see if he wants to come on the phone. But in the meantime, okay, in the meantime, you know, want to let people know you can weigh in. If you're on Zoom, we can read your comments there. I just have to keep putting my glasses on and off. If you want to call in, 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. And, you know, thanks to Ben Nicholas, I realized that our Zoom link is not on our website. So we're going to go ahead and put that up too. But if you ever want to listen to us on Zoom, really, and you don't have the link, it's pretty easy. You just go to zoom.us, which I think everybody has anymore. And the meeting number is, no, what's my meeting? Hang on. The meeting number is 209-576-423. That's 209-576-423. And if you put that in, you can't get on there till 3 o'clock. That's when the BBC or BBS guys let us in. But wanted to talk about COVID. This book by Scott Atlas, and I have not read it. And again, if people want to comment, just go ahead and go a comment. Oh, we do have Mark. Hey, Mark Griffith, are you there with us?
I'm here. For some reason, I can't get on the internet, so I'm calling you.
No, thank you. I think I was saying earlier, Amazon Web Services, the Amazon Cloud thing has been having massive problems all over the world again today. So, you know, thank God for Amazon, right? Yeah. They're doing that. So I think you're not the only one, but you've got us on the phone. So I was telling folks, you were texting me saying, oh my God, Julie, have you read this book by Dr. Scott Atlas, A Plague Upon Our House? I'm just going to let you go ahead and take it away. Why don't you explain a little bit who Dr. Atlas is and essentially the thrust of the book?
So Atlas has a very distinguished career, first as a neuroradiologist, where he'd look at the radiology of the spine and the brain. And he taught at all the major top institutions, Johns Hopkins, Harvard, Stanford, UCLA. I mean, he was a guest lecturer all over the world, very well respected. About 10 or 12 years ago, he decided he wanted to go into public health. So then he began to research and go into public health. He joined the Hoover Institution, which is, as you know, it's where Thomas Sowell is. That's where Victor Davis Hanson is. And so that's what he's been doing for the last 10 years. Last March and February and March and April, he began to talk to other people in public health. Obviously, COVID was right up his alley. And right. He talked to other people at Stanford and Harvard and some people from Europe. And he realized, hey, something's not right here. The numbers we're getting are skewed, and the numbers are getting out of the White House. And Tony Fauci is insane. So he began to publish some documents. He published an editorial, I think, the Wall Street Journal, and basically called out the way they were counting case fatality numbers and case fatality statistics. And they were insanely overestimating because they weren't taking into account all the people who had had COVID, who never went to the doctor, never had any symptoms, or if they did, they just, you know, self-medicated because it was akin to a bad cold. And he got the attention of the White House. They contacted him in July of 2020 and said, hey, would you come talk to the president? He said, sure, but I'm just coming out there for a meeting. I don't want to stay. Because he hates politics. He doesn't want anything to do with that. But he came out, sat down with the president, and his initial meeting with the president, he said he was pleasantly surprised because, not being a political guy, he believed, or at least assumed, what was being reported in the media about President Trump was probably true. That he was, you know, a bloviating blowhard that didn't really know anything and so on. Instead, he sat down with a one-on-one in the Oval Office, and he was shocked. Trump's level of knowledge on the thing was incredible. He knew all the right questions to ask. And one of the things that he began to question right off the bat, he goes, why are we testing healthy young people? It's insane. And right. That had been one of the points that Atlas had made early on, is that we're testing the wrong group. If we want to protect people, we need to protect nursing homes and senior care facilities and community centers, and provide massive PPA and massive testing for those places. For instance, we should be testing every morning. We should be testing the employees that come to work at nursing homes and so on. And
Well, let me interrupt you there, Mark. Tell me if anybody else, Dr. Don, I know you're up to speed on some of this stuff too, but it's my understanding, and this is from talking with Dr. Brian Dunedep and other people, that typically with flus and things like that, you don't test people who are asymptomatic. You don't just do random tests of, you know, you set up giant things in mile high stadium parking lots for people who aren't sick at all to come up and be tested. I mean, it's the other thing that I think you don't do, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but the test that they're using, normally they're much, they have a much smaller filter, but the tests that they're using here have this massive filter. So not only are we testing all kinds of people who normally we would never test, but we're finding things that may or may not have even been this COVID strand or the COVID virus, but it was coming back as positive. I mean, so there are all kinds of problems with the testing, right?
Right. And you might want to tell your board operator that I have internet access and I'm trying to get in.
Okay.
But that was okay. One of the things.
DJ, if you can see that, then Mark is. Okay. He's admitting you. This is invitation only. No, it's admitting only. Let me know when you're there, Mark. Well, so that's another. We'll see.
There
you go. Voila. But that's another thing too. So the test, there were a lot of reasons to be skeptical about the test from the beginning, right?
Well, the first of all, where's the optimistic, cheerful part of your duo? Where's Chuck?
Oh, I said Chuck is putting the newspaper together. Yeah. Okay. The news for the Cherry Creek Chronicle goes to the printer tomorrow. So I said, hey, look, I got Mark Griffith. We can market eye. We can. There's only a million things to talk about here. Right. So,
you know, ironically, I majored in journalism and I worked one summer as an intern in Cordell, Oklahoma at the Cordell Beacon, a light to Ouachita County since 1898.
There you go.
I have just a little bit of experience in newspapers and then never went back. So I'm not tainted with that journalistic.
On an aside here, my first job was at my first paying job, I should say, was at KLMO Radio in Longmont that was owned by John and Lila Stewart. And I was the news director of myself. I also had to do a cooking show about which I knew nothing, and I had to clean the bathrooms because, as Lila pointed out, if I didn't clean the bathroom, she had to, and she owned the place.
At this internship, when I got there, there was a grizzled old guy that was the editor, and he basically took the summer off and said, "You got the paper." So right. I was the photographer. I was the writer. My first assignment was to go out and cover the high school baseball team, and I go out there, and it's Mickey Mantle's little brother who's the coach.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
And he looked exactly like Mickey Mantle. And I'm like,
"Right,
you're Mickey Mantle's brother?" And he's like, "Yeah, I don't want to talk about it." He hated his brother.
So, well, let me get back to you. This is coming in from Dr. Donna. Right. Here's the book.
Here's the book. And I would tell you guys, it's really an easy read. I just read it a second time today to get my good notes, but it's by Scott Atlas. It's well documented. It'll shock the living you know what out of you and depress you all at the same time. Go ahead. What did Donna have to say?
Well, Donna is pointing out that the PCR test that they were doing in the beginning, even the creator of the test say it's not the test to use. It gives 80% plus false positives. If you've had a cold, it'll show up positive. Well,
even worse than that, here's this. So you normally run, there's a thing called cycles in these PCR tests, and the normal amount of cycles to run, depending on what you're testing for, and it's not supposed to be tested for viruses, but is about 25, depending on who's doing it, between 23 and 27. Well, they were running tests in the high 30s during the Trump administration because they wanted to make it look worse than it was. They wanted to have everybody have COVID. And the day on January 20th, the CDC or the FDA, whoever was in charge of the deal, they came out and said, we're going to change the number of cycles we recommend you running the test down to 23.
Right. Okay? Because now Biden's president. Now, right.
Right. Well, but we've had more cases and more deaths in this year after all the vaccines. There's so many questions.
And not only that, but Twitter is now going to start banning you from saying that if you're a vaccinated person, you can give COVID to an unvaccinated person.
Twitter, Facebook, they're all just. It's just a bunch of lies.
So tell me, some of the other maybe sort of key takeaways from Atlas's book.
Well, when I read it the first time, you know, I thought, you know, he was trying to bring truth into a lying environment.
Right.
But when I reread it this morning and today, really the big problem is Dr. Birx, the scarf queen. Okay. Wow. She comes across as an absolute moron. I mean, a one-trick pony. All she could talk about was testing. She wanted to test. And Atlas was like, we don't need to test the healthy. We don't need to test people that aren't sick because this is going to lead to lockdowns. His biggest concern as a public health policy wonk was how to protect the people at most at risk, the elderly and the obese and the sick, and how do we release everyone else to do their lives? Because this past year and a half has hurt the poor and the working poor and the working middle class. Anybody that has to go to work,
right,
they couldn't, to make a living, that's who it's hurt. And
right,
there's so many other spiritual and emotional dimensions to work. Work gives people a sense of value, a sense of,
well,
you know,
it's not a coincidence that I believe mental health issues are out the roof, drug overdoses are out the roof. I mean, we all see, you know, I remember even when I quit working at Fox, which I was really happy to, but then you go from working for many people, and I'm one of them, you know, you kind of have your office family, and these are people who you hang with and you talk to, and then you go from that and you're home all day. Not only that, but back then, remember how awful it was. Wasn't allowed. You couldn't go to the grocery store. You couldn't do anything. You've got kids. It was incredibly stressful. And what did Atlas in his book, was he saying this is necessary, or did he think it was all completely unnecessary?
Well, the first thing he says in the introduction to the book, he says, the first thing I noticed was that the entire approach of the task force was, let me fill in a blank here. So he goes back to California. He thinks he's done. He gets a call from the president personally, and the president says, I need you to come out here and do a 4-month, you know, temporary as an advisor to the president.
No, this is Trump.
Yeah, right. Okay. And Atlas was like, well, you know, you can't turn down a sitting president. So, and he said, besides, with my curricula vitae, who's going to question me? The media is not going to destroy me. He was so naive.
Right.
Anyway, he comes out, gets a room in the Trump Hotel, and starts coming to the White House every day. First, they hide him from the meetings. He can't figure it out. He listens in surreptitiously on a phone line because they're afraid. Everyone in the White House, except for Trump, was scared to death of Deborah Birx. The lady has skin paper thin, and she's extremely unqualified, and she's insecure beyond belief. I mean, just, you won't believe it. The things that I wrote down some things. I'm going to read from the book a couple of passages.
Sure, go ahead.
So, the thing he noticed right off the bat was there was no accountability from the government leaders, public health officials, or scientists. They were all over the map. Fauci comes across to the public as really the bad guy. But really, Fauci is just a megalomaniac that loves the camera. He didn't have much to do with
the policy making.
Policy. Right.
Oh, that's interesting.
That was Birx and Vice President Pence. Now, the problem was Vice President Pence, as you recall, he ran the task force, and his right hand man, so to speak, was Deborah Birx. And she had him under her complete enthrallment.
Well, here, and this is from Mark Timon. He said, Mark Griffith, I read the book too. You are right. It is awesome. Too few doctors are telling the truth. Either they're afraid or there is a huge problem with U.S. medical schools. Most doctors have destroyed their credibility with me. Well, we saw what happened. I mean, we saw doctors that I know, right, who tried to speak out and tried to, talk about this and try to put some reason into it, were told to shut up by the rest of the people in their practice because, Twitter was shutting you down. It became verboten. I mean, we got banned from YouTube. It became verboten to question anything but the official party line. And I gotta wonder, I know there are some people, our good friend Michael Tao is highly critical of Trump and says Trump should have stopped this. I would counter, Trump supposed to do? We just didn't know back then. And
I'm gonna get to that, but I want to go back to his, so he finally gets introduced to the task force. He comes to his first meeting. And he's shocked when he listens in. He says they're focusing on all the wrong stuff. No one in the room is, Birx was the only medical doctor in the room until he showed up, because Fauci didn't go to these task force meetings. Redfield, head of the CDC, FDA came occasionally, he's head of CDC, would come occasionally. Occasionally the FDA guy would come in, but mostly it was Birx. So these people have been listening to basically nonsense for 7 months. Deborah Birx was feeding them all, and most of them were just, they're not, listen, most people don't think critically. They just don't.
No.
They may be smart people, and they know their job in communications or whatever, but they didn't understand. She was just spouting off illogical nonsense.
Well, she's probably a bureaucrat. I mean, I think there is something to be said that those who can do, those who can't teach are going to. And so Dr. Donna's asking, the name of the book is by Dr. Scott Atlas. You've seen him all over on Fox and stuff. It's called A Plague Upon Our House. There you go. A Plague Upon Our House. I mean, the fact that Birx and Fauci are these bureaucrats, and Fauci remains the highest paid federal employee. I mean,
that's not true.
Oh, it's
not.
The three
football coaches of the academies get paid more than Fauci, way more.
Okay.
So Air Force Academy, Naval Academy, and West Point, the football coaches, and probably their basketball coaches.
Okay. You know. So you're saying that, too, that according to Dr. Atlas, who was at these meetings for at least 4 months, that Birx was essentially spouting this nonsense. And by the time anyone, I mean, there was so much panic.
Well, here's the thing. There were a few people that were attending these task force meetings. They met 3 times a week that were quietly going, that lady sounds crazy. But they weren't saying anything because they didn't have any. Well, Atlas shows up and he notices the first thing they're doing is they're negating natural immunity. The other thing is, this is September of 2020. We had 6 or 7 months of solid data from all over the world, Europe, Scandinavia, Asia, and Taiwan, or South Korea, et cetera. And they're still going off of the models from the college in London.
In England that turned out to be like not even,
crazy. So he's like, we've got 6 months of data. So he starts coming to these meetings with a suitcase or a briefcase full of research. He'd bring 12 to 15, 17 studies and say, we need to look at these. And they would just, they not interested. They wanted to keep going on the models because with Birx, here's my impression. With Birx, I think it's totally ego. It is with Fauci too, but different motivations. With Birx, it was totally ego. It was her bowl of rice. It was her nest, if you will. And she didn't want anybody messing with it, even if she was busy killing people because she was recommending the wrong policies. In addition, Trump was telling the public, we want to open up the schools, we want to stop the lockdowns, and she was going out to the states. She was the primary liaison between the White House and the governors and university presidents, and she was telling them a completely different set of facts. She was saying, we need to keep lockdown, and so on and so forth. Just let me give you an idea of, this is way late in the book. So for 3 months, Atlas is saying the lockdowns are not only not working, they're counterproductive because people are dying of other things, drug overdoses, alcohol addiction, suicides are off the charts, depression, etc. So finally, this is like right before the election. This is like October. Birx finally gets the message that lockdowns are not popular, even with the public. So she comes in and starts a meeting. She goes, by the way, I just want to point out, Scott, no one in the task force is for lockdowns. And so he says, and I'm going to read from the book.
Okay.
You'll love this. What page is that? Let's see here. All right. 237. Hilarious. So she says, no one on the task force is for lockdowns, even though that's what we. So Scott says, I started to ask her some questions. So I said, are you for testing healthy, asymptomatic people? She said, yes. And what will you do with that information? Quarantine them for 14 days. He said, I asked if schools should be closed if kid tested positive. She said, yes. And are you for closing bars and restaurants and restricting other businesses? And she said, yes. Thoroughly exasperated, I said, this is the definition of a lockdown.
Right.
Simply saying I'm against the lockdown and then advising policies that result in lockdowns is being for lockdowns. And the book is full of anecdotes like that where Deborah Birx comes across as
somebody. Well, and here's the thing is they had doubled down and then they had the backing of the media. And I'll get you. I want to see what Scott, but this is just my opinion. Meanwhile, you've got the Democrats are using this to completely upend and change the voting laws, the election laws in the country. You've got and now let's even get into big pharmacy. Right. I mean, they're just salivating all the money they're going to be making now because they're trying to make the vaccines. What does he get into it all? The role that maybe big pharma played in all of this?
Not as much as I would have liked. His focus is basically to tell the story of the dysfunction at the White House. Okay. Basically, you asked me, why didn't they just clean house and get some better advisors? Here's why. There were basically three groups of people, all with different interests, that were working against the interests of President Trump. Number one was the media.
Right.
You would be probably not shocked, but depressed at how many times they changed guidance, they changed the policies because the press, they were afraid of the press. They were afraid. And even in a few cases, they did change. They changed testing guidelines. They changed some other directives. And the press went ballistic. And so with 2 or 3 days later, they just changed it back because they just couldn't handle the blowback.
Right.
So that's number one, just a hostile. He was so naive about the press. He could not believe how much they lied. And I'm like, dude, you must not watch any TV. But he's not knowledgeable about other stuff. So the second group of people, so you got the media, the second group of people were the troika. He called them the troika. Fauci, Birx, and Redfield.
Okay.
Those three had formed an agreement. They had a kind of agreement together that if any one of them got canned, the other two were going to resign in.
That goes back to the controlling media, right? And then, the media would freak out.
And then the third group that was actually trying to help Trump but were working against him was his own inside advisors.
Yeah.
Kushner, Mark Meadows, a whole bunch of others. They didn't want the truth to come out because they just wanted to not. There's a quote in the book where Atlas says he was constantly told regarding the advice that Birx was giving that was 180% wrong. Don't rock the boat, Scott. And he just would think under his breath, the boat is freaking capsized. It's gone. But there's just so many instances in here where, for instance, late in the process, Atlas decided he's going to bring in people from Harvard, UCLA, Tufts, and Stanford. Jay Bhattacharya, these are names of, if you read much about this, you'd know these guys are tops in their fields.
Right.
Of medicine and statistical analysis and so on. So he arranges to have a meeting, and they're going to do a press, they're going to do it in public with the press listening in. It's going to be a question and answer session. Vice President Pence will run it. These guys are going to be on a panel. Atlas is going to be in the audience, not participating, so he doesn't, taint it because they already hate him. And then at the last minute, Pence says, oh, I can't make it. I got to go to a campaign event. And then Birx says, oh, you know what? I'm not going to come either. And she didn't say, I can't come. She just said, I'm not going to. And guess what? The next day, someone, guess who, leaked to the press that there was this cabal that were going to come in and advise the president. So they shut the whole thing down. Well, Atlas, since he's actually an advisor to the president, he called the president directly and said, Mr. President, can I get 5 minutes with you with these four gentlemen? And Donald Trump's like, sure. He's, I'm all about the truth. That's the funny thing. The one guy that cared about the truth in the White House was Donald J. Trump, the person everybody says is the big liar.
Right.
Well, so anyway, he gets 5 minutes with the president with these smart guys. They sit there and 45 minutes later, the president is still quizzing him. Mark Meadows is trying to shut him down. But victory, Scott Atlas thought, hey, we've achieved victory here.
We've explained it. Right.
Right. And Trump it confirmed all of Trump's instincts. Trump's instincts from the start were spot on. Don't do lockdowns, protect the elderly and so on. Well, anyway, so Scott Atlas goes to the communication team, Mark Meadows, and then the other lady, there were two other people that cared about the truth. One was Kylie McElhaney, and one was Hope Hicks.
And who?
Hope Hicks. Hope Hicks. Okay. But everybody else was just CYA, whatever. So he goes to the communication team. He says, let's put out a press release saying the president met with these really high-powered, smart people and blah, blah, blah. And they said, no, we're going to keep it a secret because we can't handle the blowback.
Right. And then in the meantime, now you've got all of the social media companies who, by the way, made money, right? I mean, let's never forget that. Who made money? Amazon, Facebook, Google, YouTube, all of those organizations made and continue to make money off of this. And they start censoring it. I mean, this is what I think. And then I want to switch gears a little bit here with it. And you can stay on a little bit, right? Okay. I mean, I think
a sports jacket for you, Julie.
There we go. So what we have is we've got essentially Dr. Fauci's organization manufacturing this virus, loosening it upon the public, then telling us all we all have to be locked down. Then we have to get vaccines. Everybody's making money, but the people, but us. And you're silenced and censored if you try to say anything about it. I mean, it's to me, when you look back, it is a Michael Tao says there should be war crime trials over
Absolutely.
This. I mean, what happened on this? No. And again, and the problem is that it's going to be so hard to get the truth out because all they've done is banned it. Okay, yeah, the real Anthony Fauci. That's another interesting.
A week from today, if I'm still invited, I'm going to be guest hosting this wonderful podcast.
Yes, you are.
And I'm going to talk about this book by Robert Kennedy Jr. Now, I haven't got into it yet, but I already know what's in here. Fauci's career. When I did my radio show a couple of years back, on the day that Robert Mueller testified before the Senate or the Congress, I did an hour show on his rancid career. Robert Mueller was known as the guy who would come in and clean up things for the intelligence community. He was the fixer. He would come in and cover things up, starting with the Lockerbie bombing. Anthony Fauci is that guy on steroids. He is the most hated man in the gay community, maybe short of Jerry Falwell. Because he killed tens of thousands of AIDS patients with AZT in the early 80s. Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands. Because AZT destroys your kidney functions. So they would put these people on dialysis to keep them alive, to treat them with AZT, and then say AZT works. The model for Fauci was this. This is where he's evil. And then we'll go back to the book. But this is what I'll talk about a week from today. You don't want to miss
it. Marcus filling in for us on Wednesday.
Fauci, when he came to the NIH, and now he's in a branch of that, infectious and allergy, he would work with research institutions, universities, and foundations, and the government's researchers, and they would develop these potential solutions to future viruses, whether it's COVID or AIDS or Ebola or whatever. And then once they got 15 or 20, he would dole them out and give them to different universities or research, mostly universities. But the government would retain a 50% stake in that vaccine or that therapeutic.
Right.
So then the universities would kind of finish the research and get it through the FDA. By the way, the CDC and the NIH blackballed the FDA. The FDA had such a bad reputation even then as a bunch of clowns, that they did all this surreptitiously. So the university would show up with a patent at the FDA and try to get it through the approval process. Now, if it didn't work out, then Fauci would give the patent to a pharmaceutical company, Merck, GlaxoSmithKline, Johnson & Johnson. And then they would finish the research.
And then come back and get the patent.
Right. Then if it went through and it failed, as 19 out of 20 did, they could write off all their research. If it did go through and was successful, like AZT or like...
The vaccines in this case. I mean, it's just... Then they make billions. So, then they make billions.
But Fauci and the people at the top of these institutions, they'd buy stock in the company that they knew was getting the approval.
Nancy Pelosi just said today, that's okay, Mark. Yeah. Nancy Pelosi says, it's a free market system.
Here's the really evil part, Julie. AZT was the first example. They knew it was killing their patients, but they wanted to sell a bunch of it, so they just kept pushing it. They knew that remdesivir was developed for Ebola, but it didn't work, and Ebola didn't stick around long enough. Ebola killed its host, so the virus didn't stick around long enough. So what did they bring out in March of 2020? They said remdesivir is the answer to this. Remdesivir doesn't do a damn thing to COVID. It shortens your... I read an abstract of a study on remdesivir, and it basically said remdesivir will shorten ICU stays from an average of 15 to 11 days, but there's no reduction in mortality. I'm like, well, what the hell's wrong with you?
Why That's right. Well, and this is from, let me read some of the comments. So this is from Leo. Fauci's medical advice has the same history of as Biden's foreign policy. Charlene says so much truth. Dr. Donna says, Leo, funny, but sad and true. And then this on Nancy Pelosi, she makes money, or her husband does, with the market knowledge that she has. Well, let me skip, because I want to let you, you're going to talk about that next Wednesday when you fill in with us. Let me ask you this, because I wanted to talk about this a little bit. And again, recommend everybody read that book. I know I will, by Dr. Scott Atlas, A Plague Upon Our House. But just a few more questions for you. I think we're starting to see, how do I say, I don't think that we will maybe ever see the real truth here, because so many people have so much to hide, and the media will never let it get out because they are so culpable, I think, and some of this too. But on the other hand, though, we're seeing Governor Polis suddenly 2.5 weeks after telling us, oh, we all have to be careful because we're all going to die again because of Omicron and right. You know, hospitalizations are up, now just suddenly declares COVID over. We've got other Democrat governors doing this. I think, and Biden, I think there's a new poll out today, a massive disapproval, a growing disapproval of his right. handling of COVID. I think people are sick of it. I know just anecdotally, you know, I mean, I talk to people, I have friends in Florida and other places, and they're like, we're just on with our lives. Yeah. Here in Adams County, we're supposed to be wearing masks, but a lot of people aren't. I mean, I think people have, they know that it's panic porn anymore. So when they try to put out, oh, we're all going to die of Omicron, yeah, people are like, no, we're not.
There's still a sizable number of the public, though, that believes this stuff. I went and got an X-ray a couple of months ago. Beautiful young 27, 28-year-old young mother, 2-year-old kid. And I'm like, so do you, you know, how do you treat your daughter? She goes, we leave the house. She's got a mask on. I'm like, all the time? She said, yeah. I'm like, that's child abuse. You're deprived. Have you ever thought about you're lowering her oxygen intake and you're increasing her CO2? She's like, oh, no, that's not true.
No, that's true.
She said, thousand. And she said, millions of kids have died from this. It's like 500 under the age of 20. It's like 600 people.
Well, and I think, between 6 and 11, like literally, I believe I'm right on this, no child without a massive comorbidity has died.
Most of the kids that have died that are under the age of 20 are people that would probably not make it to 25 because they either had some kind of a transplant as a child, they had leukemia, they were taking immunosuppressing drugs. And now they're trying to get those kids to take this vaccine.
Right. And I was reading a thing by Alex Berenson, who's been great on this, by the way. You can get him at Substack, where he was saying, so of the only 15% of the eligible 6 to 11-year-olds have been vaccinated. And he's like, in all of the polls and studies show, the people who haven't vaccinated their 6-year-olds are not going to, right? Because there's too much information coming out about the adverse effects. So I think that's changing. And I think you're right. I think there are a lot of people who are, frankly, psychologically inclined to believe panic porn, and they want to use it for whatever. But I think there are a growing number of people who are just over it. And I think that's why you're seeing people like Polis say, victory, COVID's over, not an emergency, we're moving on.
I think he's looking at re-election. He's looking at, I think, honestly,
presidency.
I think he's looking at running for president.
That's what I think, too.
I mean, he's basically a little bit smarter version of Pete Buttigieg. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, he's still.
No, I think so too. And way more popular. I think that too. This is kind of funny. This is from Leo. Are we going to start a Chuck and Julie book club? Yes. We can do a smash and grab at bookstores for the months. We'll go to San Francisco because it's not illegal there. Here's this. This is a little bit of a digression. I saw a tweet, and this is a brilliant tweet, Mark. And
you be careful. I don't have opinions on anything else. Just this.
Okay. Yeah. It was interesting. It said, so if I'm an illegal alien, I can defecate on the sidewalk in San Francisco, walk into the Walgreens, steal $950 worth of stuff, walk out, go down the street to a safe injection site and shoot up heroin. And all of that's perfectly legal. No one's even going to call the cops on me. But if I try to go to a Chili's without a mask, all of a sudden,
You try to walk to your table without a mask on.
Right. That's right. That's right.
Let me tell you a funny story. So a year ago, September, my wife and I took a little 5-day trip to the Yampa Valley, Steamboat Springs. We love that part of the state. I won't go back. But and I caught the biggest brown trout I've ever caught. 22 inches, probably weighed 12 pounds. It was an experience of a lifetime. But anyway, Steamboat, like all the other hoity-toity mountain towns, was just, they were insane. When Mary and I would walk down the main street of Steamboat there, it was Lincoln, I think, And people, we weren't wearing a mask. People would give us, they'd go 8 yards around us and outside. And we'd get to a restaurant and we were going to sit outside on the patio. Everybody's sitting there, no mask. It's literally, you know, 10, 15 feet away. And they said, you got to put a mask on to walk to your table. Now, we went down to Craig, Colorado in Moffitt County, one county over, and nobody's wearing a mask. So right. I went to the state health department website to see, you know, what are the numbers? Guess which county had way higher numbers? They were actually double. It was Rout County, where Steamboat is. You know, there's no correlation.
No, there is. Well, and then you see,
To bring it back to this book, just the last thing I'll say is that one of the things that Atlas goes over and over about is how disconnected from evidence their pronouncements were, their directives. He said, for instance, he questioned them about masks and social distancing because there's no literature on it, none. And they would just pull stuff out of their butt. Everything was just their ideas. And for Birx, here's another thing, circular reasoning. She would, using these models from February, which were just way wrong, they predicted...
Not even close. They were insane.
They said that we would lose in 3 months 2.2 million people by summer of 2020. Well, anyway, so Birx, using these models, would say, oh, this state, Arizona, for instance... She got the ear of Doug Ducey or whoever, I think that's the governor, and got him to agree to do masks and social distancing mandates and all this other stuff. Well, she said, according to my projections, they should have X number of deaths at the end of the next month. Well, after they put in the mask mandates and everything else, well, the number was way lower. And she said, that's proof it works. And Scott Atlas is like, that's circular reasoning because you just projected what it was going to be. You have no idea. You've been wrong every month. And also, have you not noticed that the numbers in Arizona were on decline before you ever put in the mandate?
Right. Well, and that's, I mean, it is, you know, there was another thing today. I saw 1,000 people a day are dying. This is, again, an Alex Spencer, some from, with, near, maybe had something to do with COVID, right? Which is the same number of people who've been dying all along, which to me, it proves. So what happened is because now all you die of is COVID, right? Literally, you can be run over by a truck or shot in the head, and they still list the death as a COVID death. So there are no more gunshot deaths. There are no more heart attacks. There are no more cancer deaths. Everything is a COVID death. But the same number of people are dying, which is indicative that it's like it's the same thing. Like you said, it's the sick older people who have all these comorbidities who are going to die. I mean, it's sad, but people die, right? We're going to die anyway.
Here's a statistic to speak to that: the average age of lifespan in the United States for a health for a white male, I think, is like 77 or 78. For females, it's 79. Okay, for everybody, the average age of death has been like 81.
Yeah.
Okay. Secondly, right now, we have more cases, more fatalities, with 65% of the public vaccinated. In some states, Vermont, like 95% of the population over 60 in Vermont is vaccinated.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's like 85 or 90% of the entire population over the age of 12 vaccinated. They have the highest case fatality rate right now.
Yeah.
It might be that these vaccines are causing Omicron.
Well, we don't know, but to me, it's like, I think we want to be careful. And again, as Michael Tao always says, don't get bogged down. This is all about a disease or a virus that has a 99.9% survival rate. This is a disease. This is a virus that, short of all of the politics surrounding it, would never be anything. It wouldn't be a blip. Well, it'd be a blip, but it wouldn't be anything. We wouldn't be going through all of this. And what they do is they try to get us looking over here and arguing about this and arguing that. I mean, I think we got to get back to the bottom. Listen, I'm going to let you go because Thomas, no, I didn't call for the Tucker Carlson video, but I'm going to hear pretty quick. Once again, you're going to thank you for your time.
Thanks, this Julie, is great. Remember, next Wednesday, we're going to find out all about the sordid past of Anthony Fauci and all the people he's killed.
All right. Thank you so much. Mark Griffith, thank you very much. Great job there. And okay, and this is from Karen Candling. With respect, Julie, to say people are sick of it is to suggest that these baby dot dictators care that people are sick of it. They don't. Everything they do is politically motivated. These people are more dangerous when they appear to be on our side. Karen, actually, I agree with you. I mean, I think I'm optimistic that when Polis and other politicians realize that people are sick of it, they're going to release some of the lockdowns. But you're right. He's only doing it so he can become president and then do even worse things to us. So you're absolutely right about this. I want to switch gears. This is kind of funny. This is from Leo, that basically if we had the Chuck and Julie smash and grab book club, the $900, you can steal $900 and less in San Francisco and it's not a crime. He says that would be about 1500 Cuomo books. That's kind of funny. That would be. They're probably given away. Even the smash and grab people are like, no, we're not going to take the Cuomo books. Want to talk about something also that's kind of alarming. And Tucker Carlson pointed this out. I'm sure you all know, the January 6th Commission, which is just a joke. They should be investigating the FBI. They should be investigating. More and more videos come out that show outrageous police brutality. I guess it doesn't matter if it's against a Trump supporter. We've got two people, apparently, Ashley Babbitt and then Rosalind Boland. Is that her name? Roseanne Boland, who apparently were killed by federal officers. That's okay. I mean, we're not looking into any of that. We're not looking into Afghanistan. We're not looking into how did we manage to have bomb civilians in Afghanistan, let alone the disaster of the withdrawal. Not looking into that. We're looking into the insurrection, which was not an insurrection. We're looking into the riot, which is not a riot. It was people wandering around the Capitol, and the actual rioting occurred more. We're learning is that's when the Capitol Hill police and the federal officers engaged in a violent way themselves. But in the meantime, though, they're subpoenaing everything right and left, which you got to wonder, how can Congress subpoena stuff without probable cause? That's something else, too, in a criminal case. But one of the things they've been doing is they found that the text messages from Mark Meadows, and Liz Cheney went bonkers with it and was reading them. But Tucker Carlson points out something scary about that. So if we could play the Tucker Carlson video, please.
So yesterday, in case you missed it, Liz Cheney found herself with a list of text messages to and from Mark Meadows. Meadows was Donald Trump's last White House chief of staff. Now, those texts showed no evidence of any crime whatsoever, but since she had them, Liz Cheney thought they might be embarrassing to conservatives, so she read them on television. Some of those texts, it turns out, were from anchors here at Fox News, and Liz Cheney took special delight in reading those.
According to the records, multiple Fox News hosts knew the president needed to act immediately. They texted Mr. Meadows, and he has turned over those texts.
Notice the faux seriousness, ooh, according to the record. Now, before we get into the details of what is in those texts, just step back for a second and consider what we just saw. We now live in a country where none of your private communications are safe from the eyes of power-drunk politicians like Liz Cheney. Liz Cheney can harness the awesome power of the national security state to seize your personal text messages and then read them into the congressional record. And guess what? There's nothing you can do about it, Mr. Citizen. We don't care. So your texts, effectively your daily diary, now belong to Liz Cheney. And the question all of us, no matter who we voted for, have to ask ourselves is, do we really want to live in a country like that? Well, probably we don't. Privacy isn't just a nice thing to have. It's not an ancillary concern. Privacy is morally essential. Privacy is a prerequisite for freedom. You can't have liberty without privacy. And that, needless to say, is the whole point of the spectacle, to let you know that we don't have freedom anymore and Liz Cheney is really in charge. But what's extra amazing about what Liz Cheney just did, and this is the reason you know this is a show trial, purely political and totally disconnected from reality, much less law, is that the text message that she read yesterday were exculpatory.
And not only are they exculpatory, but Adam Schiff himself admits anymore that they doctored them, right? They changed them just like he did with some of the other stuff. But what I wanted to, and we only have a couple of minutes, but I wanted to me, what is so alarming about that, it is, so let's think back to the Russia hoax, right? There you had FBI agents go to the trouble of actually setting up fake spies and fake leaks and fake dossiers, and then lying on FISA court warrants and forming these investigations, right? A lot of trouble to make up stuff and to get to people who were connected to Trump to spy on them. We have now got to a place where we're just skipping all of that. where if you're Liz Cheney and a member of Congress and you don't like something that somebody's doing, you just set up a congressional investigative committee and you subpoena that person's text. And now all of a sudden, voila, just like the fake FISA court warrant, you've got the communications of anyone that this person ever texted with. I mean, think about that. So she's got Mark Meadows texts. I mean, all kinds of stuff, right? I mean, it's like Hillary Clinton says, my daughter's yoga class, stuff like that. I mean, it's alarming that they're not even going through the motions of going through the motions anymore. They're just going directly to attacking our freedoms. And I think that's something that once it's getting lost in sort of the debate of, you know, should Trump have done this? Shouldn't have Trump done this? Was it a riot? Wasn't it a riot? Et cetera, et cetera. What's alarming is that they were able to convince Mark Meadows to go ahead and hand over his texts, which had nothing to do with any crime. There's not even an allegation of any crime. There's no probable cause. There's nothing there. They just forced him to give him their texts, which contain, I'm sure, hundreds and hundreds of texts from private citizens whose personal private communications are now being read live in Congress. And you know, I mean, if she's going to harass people for it, I mean, that's a huge step that we've gone to. And I think that is something to be really concerned about, particularly when you look at the fact that they're starting to call people like Sharona Bishop, people like us, domestic terrorists, right? They're going to continue to use that. And it's just really, really scary. And I think that's something else that we're going to be talking about more. We got a couple of more comments from people. This is from Mark Griffith to everybody. He's saying way too many people are invested in their ignorance. They don't want to admit they've been wrong. Even worse, these are the type of folks who would rather remain ignorant and in fear than tell others you were right. Leo says, no, that's right. Dr. Adonis says, yes, that's true. That is true. It's sort of the red pill, blue pill. There are a lot of people who say, I'm happy with my blue pill, right? And I don't want to think for myself. I want other people to think for me. That's why we've got people like, I'm glad Karen Catalina is listening, and Mark Griffith and all of you who are saying, no, let's use our brain, let's ask questions, let's stand up. And that's, I mean, what was Mark Meadows thinking? And I don't understand why. I'm just going to say this. When I was a reporter, every so often, and there was one case in particular where you would give a source confidentiality, right? In this case, it was a murder case, and there was a discussion about, did I have to reveal my source? And I got dragged into the station office, and they said, you know, just so you know, that if you are accused of, if the judge says that's contempt of court, if you won't reveal it, the way the law was written, we can't pay for you for that. You will have to go to jail. And there was a period of time, actually, when I'd leave in the morning, that's when my daughter was little, I would be prepared, right? I would have things set up just in case they said, nope, it's contempt of court, and you're going to put you in jail until you reveal your source. But you know what? I said, I know. And I said, no, I'm not ever, ever going to reveal my source. No, it didn't come to that. But I guess I'm wondering, what the heck are these people doing? That's like, why are they even complying with these unconstitutional congressional subpoenas? It's, I fire Mark Meadows, I know you can't have my text messages. So anyway, there's that. I'm going to let you go now. Chuck will be back. Chuck and I back on Friday. We're going to have Mark Poff with us, law enforcement expert, former El Paso County Sheriff, talking about the skyrocketing crime and some of the reasons behind all of that. There's been a lot coming out about that. Mark Griffith is filling in for us next Wednesday. Thank you to him. Thank you to everybody. And thank you to the folks at BBS. And we will see you on Party Friday.